From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We are 2 weeks away from primary night in California, but more than a million voters have already cast their ballot in the mail. Election results will start trickling in once polls close on Tuesday, June 2nd, but we are getting a preliminary look at voting trends. Political Data Inc. has long tracked early ballot returns across California via a range of wide lenses, from statewide to honing in on districts for specific races, from Congress to school boards and city council. And although identities and how people vote are unknown, key demographics are available, such as party registration, age range, as well as ethnicity and race. Paul Mitchell is vice president of Political Data Inc., and he joins us with his 2026 primary California ballot tracker. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So remind us how this ballot tracker came about.
Well, about 15 years ago, we started analyzing the data that we get from counties that would say who would return to ballot. Now, this data is available because campaigns don't want to have to text and mail and phone people who've already cast their ballots so they can go to the county and get a list of the voter IDs of everybody whose ballot has been returned. What we did to try to give some analysis was take that data and then show it, like you said, with its breakdowns of its components of partisanship, age, ethnicity. And it has become kind of like something all the campaigns are now addicted to, which is every day or now more than once a day, going in and seeing who's voted and trying to read the tea leaves for what eventual turnout will be in the state.
Help us visualize how you're able to accomplish something like this. I mean, it's not just like plugging it into, I don't know, your like your computer and then you just get like all the data from the state and whittle it down.
Well, PDI has been managing the voter file statewide for almost 40 years. Back from the old days, we used to rent big, huge Cray computers on the Warner Brothers lot. And that was the only way to manage this data. Nowadays, it's gotten a lot easier, but we do maintain the overall voter file. I've been working for the last several weeks on developing this new system people can use to be able to see the data, to subscribe, to get an email every time it's updated, to get a text message when it's updated. And we're even going to be adding more bells and whistles in here.
What is the margin for error?
Well, what the error is when we get final voting done, we don't know how many people are going to show up at the polls. We don't know how many ballots are going to come in, you know, after election day, but still be postmarked on time. So what we're able to see here is the first ballots that get received, and we know that that isn't truly representative of the full electorate. As an example, young people are about a quarter of the electorate. They're 27% of the electorate. And so far, they are only 2% turnout. So they only comprise 9% of total ballots returned. So the seniors on the other end of the spectrum, about a quarter of the electorate, and they're more than half of the ballots returned. So it will balance out as we get closer. Younger people vote later. But we can look at these and even compare to prior elections to say, you know, are we on track to having good Latino turnout or good turnout from young people, especially as we get closer to the election?
Okay. So as it stands today, Tuesday morning, we're just minutes into the afternoon, there's a 5% voter return statewide. So that's, you know, 1.1 million ballots and change. Is that typical at this point?
It's actually a little bit higher than the 2022 primary, which is the best comparison because that was a governor's primary and it was in our all vote by mail system where everybody gets mailed a ballot. So it's a little bit higher. What's interesting is Democrats are almost dead on exactly where they were in the 22 primary. It's Republican turnout that's a lot higher in these early numbers. And talking to campaigns, it might simply be that Republicans who in 2020 were told by the president and other Republicans not to vote by mail, that 6 years later, they're starting to get back to some of their older patterns and they're returning their ballots more quickly.
Do you think it could also be because top of the ticket is the governor's race? And in this race, you have six Democrats and two Republicans. So it may be an easier decision for a Republican to turn their ballot in.
Exactly. That could be happening too. There could be motivation and other factors. We know that when we have a very simple ballot, like the recall election or Prop 50 election, those ballots come in quicker because it's not hard to figure out one or two questions. But when you have a complex ballot, then it does usually slow down the voting. And then for Democrats, there's this additional thing where a lot of Democrats are concerned about the top two candidates in the runoff being Republicans. And they feel as though they need to not, quote unquote, waste their vote and vote for somebody who will make it into the runoff. And so that might be causing a lot of Democrats who are the more engaged, maybe the more online cohort, to kind of wait for the right bat signal for who is it we're all supposed to vote for, because I want to make sure that my vote isn't wasted.
Yeah. And when I said six Democrats and two Republicans, those are the leading eight candidates. I know when people open their ballot, they're 60. So we're talking about the leading candidates here. But in terms of the returns today, I looked at no party preference, third party voters, and they're equal to that of registered Democrats, 4% of returns so far. This is a gray category, though, compared to like the opposing R versus D. What can you glean from this demographic?
Well, the no party preference voters, usually they don't engage as much in the primaries. Usually their turnout's even lower relative to Democrats at this point. And we expect them to considerably underperform on the overall turnout. And it's largely because, they see all the Democrat Republican TV ads back and forth. It doesn't seem like it's their ball game. And they already have kind of self-identified as not being as into the partisan politics. And so generally they kind of bow out of the primary elections. Mm.
You mentioned that voters age 65 and older have returned their ballots more so versus the other age groups. Does anything strike you in looking at returns through this age at this point in the election, or is it pretty consistent with previous election cycles?
It's pretty consistent. The one thing that we've seen that is kind of a maybe a sign of things to come is that there is a slightly higher Latino turnout than in prior elections among these early voters. They're still severely underperforming other groups, especially the older, wider population. But there is this potential that we could be seeing a little hints of maybe some increased Latino performance. And that could be because objectively, one of the leading candidates is Latino and would be the first Latino, modern Latino governor of the state of California. Mm-hmm. And so potentially there's something that we're seeing little glimmers of there.
You know, when it comes to Asian voters, I mean, the percentage is higher so far compared to Latinos, but there are more Latinos in California. Is that typical?
That is typical. Asian voters, there are some splits. The Asian community you can't treat as a monolithic group. So you might have some Chinese voters in San Francisco who are really, really comfortable with voting by mail. And then you have Cambodian voters in Long Beach who are like, I have to go to the polls. There are these, it's weird that something like, do you vote by mail or polls, ends up becoming polarized based on partisanship and age and ethnicity. But it's true. When Alex Padilla first implemented the statewide vote by mail in 2020, he did focus groups and we watched older Latina saying, I will never vote by mail. I have to see the polling place. I have to hand it to a person. So the generational changes in vote by mail, the patterns by ethnicity and partisanship, they become habits. And so sometimes, like with the Asian community, you might see some really high performing early voters in the Asian community. And in other parts of the state, you might see them as low performing in an early vote. Mm.
In terms of race and ethnicity, the votes, as you mentioned, they're broke down as Latino, Asian and Black. But white and other are combined into one category. So I would imagine, could that include Native Americans or Arabs or Middle Eastern voters? I mean, it seems like a pretty broad group. What is the value of this category?
So there is data in PDI for some of these smaller subgroups, but a lot of them are harder to identify on the voter file. This isn't using census data where people self-describe their ethnicity. This is using data on language ballot requests, surname, and birthplaces. So certain ethnicities are easier to identify, like Armenian is very easy to identify. But maybe something else like Chaldean or Persian or something else might be harder to identify. When we look at what campaigns do in some parts of the state with like a very large, East Indian population or something like that, they might do additional segmenting of these ethnicities. But for the purposes of this broad tool, the white other captures just a lot of the non-Asian, Latino, and Black.
If you are a data nerd, this ballot tracker is just a lot of fun because there's so many ways that you can hone in to a specific area or a race. So when you take a browse around the state with that microscope, what have you found interesting so far?
Well, one of the things that's interesting is we're already seeing slightly higher turnout in some of these competitive districts, like the 6th congressional district in our area, which goes from West Sacramento through like Sacramento City and Natomas up into Roseville and Rockland. That congressional district's at 6%, a little bit more turnout right now. So we're seeing them come in a little bit quicker. We're looking at some of these competitive races around the state, like City of Los Angeles, and looking at a lot higher Republican turnout in the City of Los Angeles right now, maybe because this Spencer Pratt campaign, which has kind of gone viral, might be getting people to return their ballots. So that's the kind of stuff we look to.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Paul Mitchell with Political Data Inc. about early voting trends across California. So getting into congressional races, you are the architect of the redistricting maps in this midterm. Many voters are finding themselves in different districts, different candidates to choose from. I mean, you have long been involved in redistricting. Your firm has worked with, what, over 100 local governments to draw maps, largely in California. But Prop 50 was arguably your heaviest hand. So what has it been like seeing ballot returns in congressional races that you shaped?
Yeah, so, well, you're right to say that my redistricting work really is more local. In fact, tonight I have a redistricting meeting in a small town in the Bay Area that's redoing their, or it's creating new districts. So it has been interesting, especially in some of these new districts, like down in Southern California, Congressional District 48, the Darrell Issa seat, is a wildly competitive race. It's interesting to watch. And also nearby, Congressional District 40, if you're a political nerd and you want to see some really scathing TV ads, the Young Kim versus Ken Calvert, Republican versus Republican race down there under the 40th Congressional District, which is really the only Republican safe district in Southern California now, that has been entertaining to watch. So definitely there have been times where I see something that is a function of the new Prop 50 maps. And it definitely makes it interesting this cycle.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the governor's race, the crowded one at that, you created early on this year an online primary simulator called California's Top Two Twins, you know, homage to the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito classic. Is that still live? Because users can plug in a number of different variables, right? And then it kind of runs through all these simulations about who would advance to November.
Yeah, it's still live. In fact, I have to update it right now with the new polling from the Democratic Party. But yeah, we've had over 50,000 people go or 50,000 uses of that site since it's been up. And it is a way not only to look at the likelihood of the top two Demo reap, but also the probabilities of different candidates making the runoff is in there. It's not really the advertised usage, but a lot of people use it for that. It has been interesting. And one of the things that's very interesting is this whole thing has jumped into like what normies are seeing, like regular voters. When you talk to people at like a soccer game or the coffee shop, they'll say, I'm worried about two Dems or two Reeps getting into the runoff. Like if they're Republican, they don't want to see two Democrats. If they're Democrat, they don't want to see two Republicans. And I recently did some polling that showed 70% of voters are worried, 70% of Democrats and Republicans are worried that they're not going to see a candidate from their party in the runoff. So we're now talking about voters making decisions about who they're going to vote for governor, in part based on making sure that they can get a candidate into that runoff.
What do you make of this governor's race? Are there other gubernatorial elections that it reminds you of?
Well, it's interesting is there's two that I often think about. One is the 1998 gubernatorial election with Al Checky, Jane Harmon, and that was the one where Gray Davis kind of came up from nowhere and split the middle there and ended up winning. The second one, oddly, is the 2020 presidential primary, where so many of the kind of establishment voters, the more engaged voters, if they weren't with Bernie Sanders, they were watching those early primary states and holding onto their ballots, waiting for the cue of who do we vote for? And that's kind of something that's happening right now with the most engaged, most online voters they're holding onto their ballots or texting their friends or texting me or whomever saying, you know, which is the right candidate to vote for, because I want to make sure that I don't waste my vote. So that has been very 2020 primary-ish.
Do you see some other parallels to what's happening in terms of voting trends in California, which is nationwide trends?
Well, definitely the nationalization of what are purely statewide elections is interesting. But this first came up in 2018. We're generally a gubernatorial election. You've got the governor's race, the statewide contests. You know, we don't even have a U.S. Senate race. So like we have basically a set of contests that should really focus on California issues, you know, homelessness, housing, education, those kind of things. But instead, just like in 2018, this election cycle, largely because of Trump, is a nationalized election. People are worried about ICE and Trump and who's going to fight back. The messaging on this governor's race has been really interesting and reminiscent of 2018.
Hmm. What is, I guess, the identity of a California voter compared to other voters in the state? I mean, can you, I guess, help paint us a picture of how you would describe a voter in California?
Yeah. So first off, when we talk about, you know, all Californians, all 40 million, only 23 million of them are registered to vote. Of those 23 million who are registered to vote, about 30 to 40% will actually be the people who cast ballots. Those voters are going to be the more engaged, the older voters generally. They're going to be more partisan. They're going to be more the kind of folks always watching CNN or always talking about politics versus the folks who, you know, just kind of tune in once every 4 years when it's a big presidential race. So there definitely is a non-representative kind of pocket of Californians that will decide for the other 40 million who's going to be the next governor, or what policies are we going to have. And it is concerning because oftentimes that pocket of voters who actually decide the outcome of an election for all 40 million of us is just not representative. It's more homeowners, fewer renters. It's more older, fewer young people. It's more white, fewer Latinos and other, you know, minority groups. So the unrepresentative nature of it, especially in a low turnout election, I think should be concerning to everyone, because we want to have a government that everybody feels equally bought into. But there's only certain groups that are really helping make those decisions.
Finally, have you voted yet?
I have not. I still have my ballot. Myself, my wife, and my stepson all have our ballots on the kitchen counter. I'm very confident we'll return our ballot. But the last final thing is, if anybody's listening to this and they're more than 50 miles away from an urban core, the post office is telling people to mail their ballot 1 week early or drop it off at a drop box or go to the polling location, because they've changed the way they stamp the postmark on ballots. And in the 2025 special election for Prop 50, there was a four-fold increase in ballots being categorized as too late from rural parts of the state. So if you're living more than 50 miles from the city, please mail your ballot in early or do it at a drop box or in person.
That is important advice. Paul, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Paul Mitchell is the vice president of Political Data, Inc., joining us with his 2026 primary ballot tracker. Up next, if you're looking for a fast-paced sport with roots down under, a local club has got you covered. We'll meet the Sacramento Suns and learn what it means to play footy. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.